Okay.
So last week we turned back to Shaul and we saw the whole story of Shaul and the Baalat Ov. And it really was, in many ways, the nail in the coffin. You know, the moment that exposed so many of Shaul's flaws, where he's getting the message from Hashem out. You know, he's not responding to Shaul's attempts to reach him. The Radak pointed out last week that if we contrast Shmuel with Divrei Hayamim, we notice another failing of Shaul, that he never really goes all the way. Okay, just like in the very first story Shaul had when he gave up prematurely when searching for the donkeys. So, he gives up prematurely when fighting the Plishtim. He gives up prematurely when fighting Amalek. Well, he was only Shoel. He only asked after Hashem and after the Nevi'im, but he never was Doresh. He never went all out searching for Hashem. He only was Doresh to the Baalat Ov. At the same time, if Shaul does not get the message from Hashem that he wants, well, he convinces himself otherwise, right? Well, I need to talk to Shmuel, so if I'm not getting the message from the Navi, I'll get the message from some other mechanism. Just the basic lack of Yira Shamayim, which is no small matter. I mean, it's tremendously difficult to have that level, but that's the level which is needed for a king. It's the level that Shaul cannot muster, and we see, the story ends in disaster. It's night. He's not dressed as a king. Shmuel is telling him it's all gone down the tubes. Everything is the opposite of the way things were when he first met Shmuel earlier in his career. And we're left with a very, very dark image. It's literally dark and it's figuratively dark. So now the Navi is going to shift back to David HaMelech. And it's part of an amazing thing just literally that the Navi does as it gets to the end of Shaul's life, is we keep on going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, from a parak about David to a parak about Shaul, and back and forth. So in parak Chav Zion, we saw David marching, we saw him go to the land of the Plishtim. We saw him begin marching with the army of the Plishtim to fight B'nai Yisrael up in the north at Har Gilboa. Then parak Chav Ches, we shifted left the world of David and the Plishtim, and we saw what's happening on the other side of the camp where Shaul is. Now, Perek Chaf Tes and Lamed, we're going to shift back to look at David HaMelech, and then Perek Lamed Aleph, we're going to shift back to Shaul, to see Shaul's death, and then we'll shift back one more time in the first Perek of Shmuel Beis to see the scene of David HaMelech when he hears the news, right? So the Navi is just putting these two people together again and again and again. And we'll really explore not only how the Navi shifts back and forth, but this week when we look at David and he's going to fight against the Amalek, we're going to see that the Navi beats us over the head with the fact, you are reading this parak about David, you need to be thinking about Shaul. And you need to be thinking about where Shaul came up short to understand this week how David is really coming into his own and showing all the traits which are necessary for someone to be the ultimate king of B'nai Yisrael. Okay, so with that as a background, let's get started. So we're going to do Perek Chav Tes very quickly today because really want to dig into Perek Lamed. Perek Chav Tes is going to be the Perek where David is still with the Plishtim and he's going to get out, and then Perek Lamed is going to be the fight against Amalek. So the Navi tells us in the beginning of the Perek that all of the Plishtim are gathering at Afek. That's ominous because Afek is where the first battle with the Plishtim happened in the beginning of Shmuel Aleph, the battle in the time of Eli and Eli's sons. So the Plishtim took that over. It was on the Shvelah near the coast. They never relinquished that. So the Plishtim are marching up along the coast. They camp at Afek, and then they're going to go east into Emek Yisrael. And we'll examine this more in detail next week. We'll look at some pictures and we'll see what the Plishtim are doing. For now, it's not our issue. The army of the Plishtim is tremendous. Lemeos fal alafim, right, in the hundreds and in the thousands. And David is with Achish in the back. Remember, Mefarshim disagreed last time we saw David. Was he already Achish's bodyguard? Was he being promised he will be Achish's bodyguard? The Malbim is a very interesting idea that Achish specifically wanted a foreigner because a foreign bodyguard, there's no way he's ever going to be king. You know, if you're a king, last thing you want is to make your son or your brother the bodyguard because they'll just kill you and take over the throne. But doesn't have to worry about David. So the Plishtim are not happy about this. What are these Hebrews doing here? Ivrim is always the derogatory term that the Plishtim use for Bnei Yisrael. And in parallel, Arelim is the derogatory term that the Jews always use for the Plishtim. So Achish says, what do you mean? This is David. David's great. And the Plishtim say, you're insane, right? And we'll see in a minute that they're extremely justified. They say, we can't have this guy in the camp. What's going to happen? Send him back. There is no way we're not going to be there because he will be an enemy to us in the middle of the battle. But there's no way we can have this guy be with us in the army. We cannot trust him. After all, all those prakim ago when David was Shaul's general and David was wiping out Plishtim by the thousands and tens of thousands. So now you have this basic debate between the Plishtim and Achish. Achish says, that's amazing. Look what a brilliant warrior David was. Yeah, he killed so many Plishtim. Now he's on our side. And the Plishtim say, you're nuts. He killed so many of us. How can you possibly trust him? And of course, the other Plishtim are absolutely correct, right? That is exactly what David's plan was. And we'll see David's going to take heat for this from his men in a little bit. Right? The David did plan on turning on Achish and the Plishtim from the rear in the battle. So Achish tells David, Chai Hashem. It's amazing. You see the influence that David could have on somebody. And he has this Plishti king who's swearing by David's God. Right? He doesn't say Elokim. And he says Yudke Vavke. He says, you've been amazing. You've been perfect. You've been beautiful. But now you've got to go back because the other Sarnei Plishtim, the other Plishti chieftains, do not want you around. David tries very hard. And we see, David can totally, he can totally play smooth. What did I do? Ma'asisi, ma'matas, avdacha. I've only been good. And Achash says, yeah, I know, but I'm sending you back. Okay, so David goes back. Now, we just need to appreciate, and that's all we're going to do for the parak, we should just appreciate that the Plishtim were burned by this once before. Back in Parak Yudalid of Shmuel Aleph, the first battle that Shaul waged against the Plishtim, that was the battle where Yehonasan really took charge. Yehonasan climbed up the cliff with his lad, and they threw the Plishtim into turmoil, and then all of a sudden, the tide of the battle shifted, and the Bnei Yisrael got momentum. And then the pasuk there told us something interesting. It said, "V'hayvrim hayu leplishtim kasmo shalshom, asher alu imam b'melchama saviv." The Hebrews, and notice, right, the Navi used a derogatory term, who were with the Plishti army. The Plishtim had such a dominant position in land of Israel at the beginning of Shaul's reign that there were Jewish soldiers who they had forced to fight in their army. Just like, think about the Romans, they fight the Jews in the second base of Mikdash. We know the historian Josephus. What happens to Josephus? He's a Jewish general. He surrenders. He ends up being with the Romans, right? That's what happens when if you can't beat them, join them. Well, once they beat you, they force you to join them. So they're Jews in the Plishti army. And once Shaul and Yehonasan begin winning, so the Navi said, they changed sides. Saviv gamhema liosim Yisrael asher Shaul im Shaul Yehonasan. And we talked about this, and we learned the parak, that this, the Plishtim had totally inflated numbers, but really were very vulnerable, because they have these soldiers in their army who are not loyal to them. And the Plishtim got burned, because all of a sudden they're surrounded on both sides. They got Shaul and his group from one side. They have the soldiers who they thought were with them from the other side, and it ends in total disaster. So the Sarnei Plishtim, they're telling Achish, we've seen this movie before. We are not going to have 600 elite Jewish troops in our army ready to turn on us and create that exact dynamic that we dealt with in the beginning of Shmuel's reign. It's another callback to the beginning of Shaul, right? That's another instance in which things are going to be opposite, because in Shaul's first battle, he did have Jewish soldiers on the other side to help him. Well, this time he won't, because David gets sent back. Okay. So David leaves, and we can just, you know, take a look at the map. We'll get a sense of where he's going to go. This is the map of all of David's wanderings. So here's Gat, which is the city where Achish is the king. So the Plishtim are marching all the way up the coast to Afik, which would be somewhere around over here, let's say. And then they're going to go, you know, around this way to fight the Jews in the north. So David goes back south, and he goes all the way back to Ziklag, which is the city where his home base was. A city which is on the border between the land of the Plishtim and the land of Yehuda. Originally belonged to Yehuda, the Plishtim took it over. Now David is living there. And David, in the Parak of Zion, had been spending his time in Ziklag, raiding against all the desert enemies down here in the south, who are both the enemies of the Plishtim and are the enemies of Shevet Yehuda. David has been fighting both of them, and then he's been telling Achish that I've been busy fighting Jews, when actually he's been busy fighting Amalek and others. So David marches back. Why do we care? So the Navi says it's a three-day journey. He marches back to Ziklag. And when he gets there, it's a disaster. It says Amalek had raided from the Negev. They raided the Negev. They raided Ziklag. They burnt the whole town. And they captured all the women and children. There were no men. Lohi misuish, right? They did not kill a single person. Why does the Navi tell us that Amalek did not kill a single man? It's not to tell us that Amalek was nice, right? They just captured the women and children and take them into slavery. And we're going to see in a couple minutes what Amaleki slavery looks like. The Navi is telling us they didn't kill any men because there were no men there for them to kill. The entire army has gone north. They left Ziklag undefended. So the Amalek walks into this place where there's no army. They take all the people into captivity. The people see this. They all weep terribly. I understand why, but you see that they are absolutely completely distraught. Right. David's own wives have also been captured. So this is personal for him. It's not just for his men. He also has skin in the game. Now, here's Pasuk, which I want to zoom in on for a bit. Ha'tetzel David ma'od. It's a big problem for David. Ki amru ha'am l'saklo, ki mara nefesh kol ha'am ish albanav albanosav. David's army wants to stone him to death. Makes us think of Moshe and Aaron, right? That's what they have to deal with all the time. They want to stone him to death because they're in total anguish for their children who have now been led off into slavery. Vayeschazek David b'Hashem Eloka. Same time, David strengthens himself in Hashem. Okay, that's going to be extremely important. But first, we should appreciate why David's men are so angry. It gives us some insight into what David is willing to do in the previous parak when he's going to go to war with Achish. First, the Radak points out, says it's no coincidence that Amalek came to Ziklag to raid the city. Says David's been killing Amalekim from Ziklag for months. So it was only a matter of time before before Amalek investigated, where exactly are these raiders who keep on coming and killing us coming from? He says, Chapsu Adavar, Ad Shematsu, Kimit Ziklag, Hayu Yotzim Lahem HaSholim. Eventually, they figured out, they tracked, they traced where the army had come from, and they came from Ziklag. So David has enemies. David has enemies, right? Amalek does not like David because he's been killing him for months. So it is it's a high risk security situation. It should be expected that Amalek is going to come after you. These are not nice people, right? Put a mile in. See how not nice they are in a little bit. And yet, despite the fact that David should be expecting a revenge attack from Amalek, he goes anyway. He goes with his whole army up to be with Achish in the north. He doesn't even leave a single soldier. He has 600 men.
He doesn't even leave a skeleton force there to guard the families. So it's a high-risk situation. They know that Amalek is coming after them. David decides to take his entire army with him to fight anyone. And Matsudas David says, this is exactly why David's men are livid. This is why they want to stone him to death. Because they say, what on earth were you doing? David was so desperate to save Shaul that he's going to take his whole army to the north on, let's face it, what is probably a suicide mission, because they might save the actual Jewish army. But if there's 600 men in the back, their odds are not very good. They're going to go on a suicide mission in a desperate attempt to save Shaul. And what do they accomplish? All they did was they left their own families unguarded and vulnerable to Amalek. So David, what are you doing? You've been so desperate twice already. Parakav Dalid, Parakav Vav. You could have killed Shaul and you didn't. And the first time that happened, David's army didn't understand it. David, Shaul is trying to kill us. We're running like fugitives again and again and again. And we have the chance to kill Shaul. We didn't. And David is so loyal to the Mashiach Hashem. There's one thing in Parakav Dalid, not to kill Shaul. And again, in Parakav Vav, not to kill Shaul. But here we see David's loyalty to Bnei Yisrael, that he will go on a suicide mission while simultaneously leaving his family in a distinct, in a very vulnerable place to try desperately to save the Jewish army from being destroyed by the Pleshtim. And his men have had it. We're done with Shaul. We're done with that whole army. You've just left us now with nothing, and they want to kill him. And at the same time, there's one more point, which is, if you know anything about Amalek, and David, who has been fighting Amalek for months, knows all about Amalek, then you would know that this is exactly their MO. Looking for the weak and the vulnerable and finding the place where there's no protection, that is always, from day one, what Amalek has done. That is literally what Amalek did to us in the Midbar. That's what the Pasuk flags for us in Parsha Zachor. The Torah says, Asher karcha baderach vayzaneh v'cha kol hanecha shalom acharecha. Did Amalek have the guts to take us on head on? No, that's not how they operate. They look for the weak points. They look in the desert. They're all about exploiting the weak and the vulnerable. Truth is, there's a lot that Amalek has in common with the world of Sodom, which we'll see the parak is going to bring up for us a little bit also as we go on. The minute they see soldiers, they leave. They don't attack. They attack when they sense weakness. So David, you knew that Amalek hated us. You left north on a wild goose chase to try of all people to save Shaul. And you knew that by leaving vulnerable, you know, the family vulnerable, that Dafka is the invitation from Amalek of all nations to come after us. And of course, Amalek is Lo Yirei Elokim. And Amalek is the quintessential nation that does not fear God. So the men are livid. And then how does David respond to his furious men? Right, he responds with Vaychazek Bashem Eloka. And here already we begin to see the contrasts between Shaul and David. Because what does David do going forward? Immediately David says, bring the Kohen Gadol. Bring the ephod. We're going to ask Ribbono Shel Olam what we should do. We're going to ask the Urim V'Tumim what to do. And he's going to stand down as men. He's going to turn to Hashem. And all around, this is the exact opposite of what happened with Shaul and Shaul's battle. Shaul's fight against Amalek, where Shmuel told him time and time and time again, right? Listen to the voice of Hashem. Lo shamata b'kol Hashem. Lo shamata b'kol Hashem. You're thinking of this as just a battle. You're thinking of this as national security. You're not thinking of this in religious terms at all. That was how Shaul fought his battle. Any fight with Amalek has to be a fight where Hashem is front and center. Because of all nations, it is the most, that's the Yad Al-Kes-Ka battle, right? That is just, that's the most elemental spiritual combat. It's between Klal Yisrael and Amalek. Shaul did not understand that. He just thinks of this in terms of another enemy that I have to fight. He does not turn to Hashem. And at the same time, what does Shaul tell Shmuel at the end? After Shmuel, you know, pushes him, and finally got Shaul to cave, What did Shaul finally say to Shmuel? I'll tell you why I didn't do it. Chatasi ki avartis pi Hashem es tvarecha. He breaks down, he admits he sinned. Ki yareisi es ha'am v'shma v'kolam. I listened to my people. I was afraid of my soldiers. And I listened to them instead of listening to Hashem. I did not fear God. I feared the Am. I did not listen to the call of Hashem. I listened to the call of the Am. And that is when Shmuel had told him, Im katona ta beinecha roshata lishita Yisrael. You got to carry yourself as a king. And a king is someone who leads the people and not vice versa. And all of that is the total antithesis of David's behavior over here. David's men want to kill him. They're furious. And then the Navi says, David turns to Hashem. David is somebody who is not your AC Esa'am. He has been leading his people in a direction they did not want to go for many, many prakim. They could not believe in the cave that he was not going to fight, not going to kill Shaul. But he stood them down because he thought that that was not the Ratzon HaBoreh. Here too, right? The people want to go after him. David immediately realizes, this is a situation where I don't need to turn to them. I don't turn to my people and say, okay, let's make a plan. Let's come down. Let's think militarily. Let's get the maps. We've been fighting these people for months. We know all their hideouts. We know all the routes. We're like the best Amalek fighters in the land. This is not such a terrible crisis. We can do this. We can go after them. We can track them down. We know what to do. Not what David says. He does not think militarily. He immediately says, if Amalek is here, this is a situation where we need to turn to the Ribono Shel Olam. Bring me the Kohen. Not bring me the generals. Bring me the Kohen. That is going to be our response. And it works. It works because David's men realize, you know, they respect a person who is all about his values, who's all about following the Ratzon HaBoreh. It's worked for David this far, and it's going to work for him going forward. Okay. So now David takes his 600 men, and they're going after the Plishtim. Now, the Amalek's army. Now, last time we saw Jews fighting Amalek, it was Shaul. He was leading an army of like 230,000 Jews or something. It was like over the top. David's got 600 guys. And now he's going to have even less. Because Navi tells us that not everybody made it past the Nachal Abusor. Hando Sarim Amadu. There were some who stayed behind. David is left originally at 600. Now he only goes at 400. Masayim Eshacher Pigru Meavoris Nachal Habisor. 200, literally, a pegger is a corpse. A pegger is a dead body. So there are 200 people who are so afraid that they would not cross the brook. And we can understand why, by the way. I mean, what they're doing is nuts. They're going after Amalek with 400 men. I mean, this was done by Shaul with thousands and thousands of soldiers. When Yehoshua fought Amalek, he fought with thousands and thousands of soldiers. That is going to go with 600 guys. So there are 200 men who can't, they can't go. It's a suicide mission. It's crazy. They can't go. 400 remain with David. Who are these 400? Probably. I'm just going to scroll down for a second. Remind us. It's probably David's original 400 men. When David first got together, the people in the Midbar Yehudah who were down and out in Yehuda. So he had 400 men. One parak later, he's up to about 600 men. When he goes to attack Naval, remember that was the Asa parallel, he had 400 men and 200 remained behind with all the stuff. So it seems pretty clear that David has his original hardcore of 400 real fighters. And then he's got another 200 guys who are kind of schleppers, you know, so they're in the army. But they're not actually the key force. It's probably those 200 guys, those add-ons, those latecomers to the party who never really integrated into David's original core force who are wimping out and they're saying, we can't go. And we should appreciate that it's reasonable for them to wimp out. It takes immense bitachon to keep going because this is not a battle that by any rational means they should have any chance of winning. Okay. So then Pasuk Yud Aleph, the Navi continues, and it's the pasuk over here, which the truth is, out of any pasuk in Tanakh, really gives us the deepest insight into what Amalek is all about. I guess that plus what happens in the Chumash. But really, we see the ethics of Amalek on full display over here. They're running in the desert. Right? They're somewhere in the middle of nowhere in the Negev. They find an Egyptian lying in the field. They bring him to David. They give him bread. They give him water. They give him some figs. They give him some raisins. Person was abandoned in the desert for 3 days and three nights, no food, no water. So they're carefully bringing him back to health. Right? These guys, they know how to fight in the desert. They know how to revive somebody who's suffering from dehydration. So they give him a little bit of glucose. They give him some water. They give him some fruit, give him a little bit of sugar, slowly bring him back. Now, what was happening? Why was this Egyptian abandoned for 3 days? So David says, what on earth are you doing? And the guy tells him, Ayomer, Na'ar mitzri anochi, eved le'ish amaleki, ve'azveni aduniki chalisa yom shlosha. I'm an Egyptian, I am a slave to somebody from Amalek, and my master abandoned me because I was sick on the journey 3 days ago. So what's amazing here is that, I mean, this really shows us the cruelty of Amalek. Because if we think of a society in Tanakh which is bad for slaves, so immediately we would think of Mitzrayim. Right? We think of Egypt as the society which is terrible to slaves. But yet here we see Amalek, which is so cruel and so indifferent that Amalek will not even bother giving a mercy killing to the slave, the Egyptian slave who falls sick on the way. Once he is of no use to Amalek, he's literally a nothing. They just leave him by the side of the road to die a horrible death of thirst and of starvation in the desert. If you do not have anything for me, I do nothing for you. That's the midah of Sodom, Shaliva, Shaliva, Shalach, Shalach. And that is the midah of Amalek over here. Total cruelty. He's your slave. You have any, forget about carrying him with you on the road. Not even, or leaving him with a little bit of fruit, leaving him with some supplies. We're even killing him so he doesn't have to suffer. Mamish, nothing. Nothing. If you have nothing to provide for me, I'm not interested. Just leave him like a rock on the side of the road. That is the cruelty. That's what Amalek is all about. Now, it totally backfires on Amalek because this guy gives all the intel. He tells them where they were going. He tells them what they did. The guy tells him, I'll lead you to the army. You get a sense of what terrible people Amalek are. That the David says, can you bring me to this troop, to this camp? And he says, no, on two conditions. One, swear you won't kill me, and swear you won't come back to my master. It's like, that's even worse, you know? It's chas v'shalom, you should do that. Okay. So that works, right? So David continues with his original 400 men, and it's amazing. Right, amazing success. They get there. Amalek was having a party. They did not imagine anybody would ever go after them. So they're eating, they're drinking, they're rejoicing with all the booty they had taken, because they had not only captured Ziklag, they also had raided the land of Yehuda. They had raided the land of the Plishtim. So they have many, many slaves, many, many spoils, and they're enjoying all of it. And so David shows up, and right, we have this contrast. We have the spoils people, Amalek, and we have the fighters. And that's David. And David fights them. The Gemara discusses what this word means. Mehaneshef ad ha'erev. Oh, actually, yeah, and then they take an opinion on this. The question is, did David attack them? Does Neshef mean dawn? And the Pasuk means that he struck at daybreak and he fought all day long until dusk. Or does it mean that David attacked them at twilight, right, which JPS translates it over here, and then he fought them through the entire night and then through the entire day, right, all out, right? According to you, 24 hours of all out fighting David does, not stop. We don't stop for dark. We don't stop for light. Nothing is holding us back. Ve'lo nimlat mehem ish. And I read this and I bolded this because the way the Navi wants you to think of it is, nobody escaped. 400 men escaped on camels. So the fugitives from the battle against Amalek are the same size as David's whole army. So it does give us a sense of the size of the camp that David is taking on, the numbers that he is facing, right? But notice how the way the Nabi says it, it doesn't say, you know, and only 400 men got away. It says, nobody escaped. David wiped out everybody except for 400 men. In other words, the Nabi is presenting it as if David has just fulfilled the mitzvah of Machias Amalek. So what Shaul conspicuously failed to do, David is doing. Now, in terms of the numbers, David is less successful because Shaul wipes out everybody except for Agag, the king, and David does leave 400 survivors. Now, you know, the truth is, it seems pretty clear that Shaul did not actually kill everybody. If he killed everybody, it's hard to imagine there'd be so many Amalekim only a few prakim later. But the Navi wants to have the impression we have these two people, and totally opposite experiences. Shaul, who is not listening to Hashem, who's thinking of this in secular terms, who is afraid of his men, who is not going all out to fight, who is taking the spoils. See, Shmuel rips Shaul for taking the spoils he wasn't supposed to, and for not killing everybody. And David, every point is the opposite. He goes to the Urim and Tumim. He's inspiring his men to go with him. And they're fighting all night long, ignoring the spoils, and they're wiping on everybody. And from this point on, happens to be, Amalek is wiped out as a strategic threat to Bnei Yisrael. You want to look for another fight against Amalek? You have to go to Divrei HaYamim. And the pasuk there says that, like in the time of Chizkiyahu, hundreds of years later, some men from Shevet Shimon marched down into the desert, and they finished off the last remnants of what Amalek had. As a strategic threat from this point on, Amalek is gone. Amalek is done. David wipes out Amalek, and he brings everything back. Right? It's as dramatic as it could be. On the one hand, Amalek, lo nimlat mehem ish. On the other hand, for David, lo ne'eldar lehem min hakaton ve'ad gadol. Nothing is missing. The soldiers aren't missing. The soldiers are all survived. All of the captured women and children are brought back. All of the spoils are brought back. Hakol hishiv David. Total opposites. The realm of Amalek and the realm of David are in complete opposite poles. Okay. So we see then the Navi contrasting David with Shaul, right? It's not just that these prakim are going back and forth. But even within the stories, we're seeing David's experience being so different from that of Shaul. And it all goes back to that original core move that David had, Vaychazik David Bashem Elokav, that was his instinct. That is who he turned to. Now, the Navi has an interesting bit of a postscript. At this point, so we might be reminded of one other battle in Jewish history where you have a small group that chases after a very, very large group and ends with immense success, and then there's an issue about spoils. We read it a couple weeks ago, right? There was the battle of Avraham and the four kings and Sidon. You see, the Navi's aware of that. Let's read a few more psukim. So the Navi says over here, "V'yigach David as kol atzor ba'bakar." So they take it all. "V'yemru zesh shlal David." This is David's point. "V'yavo David al ma'asayim anashim ha'shepigru milachas achari David." Now they go back to those 200 guys who just didn't have the guts to keep going. So they come towards David. "V'yigash David as amesh alahem shalom." Now, we can imagine the 400 men are not going to be the biggest fans of the 200 men. And, well, let's see. So, Vayan called Ish Ra Ublial. That is extremely harsh. All the evil and Blial, and Blial is like the most loaded term in Sefer Shmuel, those who are Bli'ol, those who overthrow the yoke. So, they're Ra and they're Blial. Me'an Hashem Rasha'el Chum David. What do these unbelievably terrible people say? Vayan Ru. Ya'an asher halchu imi, since you did not come with us to fight, lo nitain lahem me'ashalol asher hitzalmi. We're not going to give you any of the spoils. Ki im ish es ishto, des banav, v'inagu v'ayilechu. We'll give you your kids back. We'll give you your wives back, but no money. No. I would ask. That actually seems pretty fair. That seems pretty reasonable. You guys wimped out. We risked our lives on a borderline suicide mission. So we'll return your families, but we're not going to return any. You're not going to get any of the spoils. That actually sounds pretty reasonable. I would call that Mida Beinonis. I would call that an average person. Good. So why does the Navi call them Ish Ra Ublial? They're like the worst of the worst people of all time. So David disagrees with them. And David says, no, it's not what we're going to do. You know, Hashem gave us the spoils. So we're going to split. And the Navi says that David made this like a general rule for Kal Yisrael. Okay. What's so bad? What's so bad about them wanting to keep the spoils and give them the prisoners back? Why is that crazy? So what we need to appreciate is this link to the legacy of Sodom. Because where have we last seen somebody who wanted to make a split and say, one group is going to get the Nefesh and one group is going to get the Shalom? Right? It's a callback to the world of Sodom. And that was literally the deal that that the Melech Sodom thought he was making with David, right? In his whole mentality, so, you know, wars are about conquest and riches and money. And he says to Avram, okay, you'll take, you know, give us our subjects back and you take the Nefesh. And Avram says, no, you misunderstand. I'm not interested in the spoils. I don't fight for spoils. And, you know, I'm not taking a thing. I'm not taking a bootstrap or a shoelace. You're not taking a thing. So we have something very similar over here as well, right? David has just led an army against overwhelming odds, vastly outnumbered. They win. They bring back the Nefesh. They bring back the people. They bring back the Shalom. And David has men in his army who are thinking like Sodom. They are focused on the Shalom. That is why the Navi is so critical. And this exact behavior happened before. Twice in Shaul's career, both the first battle against the Plishtim and then the battle against Amalek, the Jews ran after the Shalom. They ran after the spoils. But you do not fight battles for spoils. And you definitely do not fight battles against Amalek for spoils. When you are fighting against Amalek, you need to realize that this is Melchamat Hashem. You are fighting Hashem's war. Yad Al-Kes Ka. You need to realize that when you fight Amalek. Amalek, they have the same legacy of Sodom. It's the society which is all about persecuting the weak. And this is a religious battle. And the people who don't think of it that way, to beat Amalek and then have your primary interest be money, means that these people have totally missed the boat. Because they're thinking in Sodom terms, having just defeated the Amalek heir to Sodom nation. And this battle has to be ideological, not just military. They totally missed the boat. That is why the Navi describes them with such harshness. And David says that's not what we are going to do. And Rashi has a very interesting comment. Right. So that's a forward that David made it a chok and a mishpat until this day. It's a redundant phrase, right? It was from that day on that David made it a law until today. Well, that's redundant. So what exactly is going on over here? So Rashi says, no. Me'omahuhu v'mala. Lo ne'mar v'hala, says Rashi, el umala. Kvar inhig avram b'chok zeh. David is going back to the past. Me'omahuhu v'mala. He's going back to the past. And he is regenerating it, bringing it back to life. Ad Hayom Hazeh. He's going to the past for the future. Avraham did this, says Rashi. Biladaya, Raka Shachu Hanarim. Give some to the people, to my soldiers, to compensate them for their expenses on the way. Right? But Avraham's primary message to Sodom was, we do not fight for Shalal. Shalal is not where primarily interested. That's what you are interested in, Sodom. And Rashi says that's exactly the message that David HaMelech is instilling in his army for all time. We are going to share this with everybody. And as we go forward, the parak concludes, and we see what David does, right? You all deserve bracha. Here I am giving you spoils from the enemy of Oyvei Hashem. David recognizes who this is. This is not just some ordinary battle. David knows what Amalek is all about, and he knows what the response has to be. On the front end, it's about turning to Hashem, turning to the Urim V'Tumim. On the back end, it's about not running to the spoils like Shaul and his army did, like some of David's Anshei Ra'ul wanted to do. It's about recognizing that this is a gift from Hashem, from Hashem's enemies, and we're going to use that for the exact opposite purpose as Amalek. Amalek, which is completely about me, myself, and I. The concept of chesed does not exist in the world of Amalek. And David is going to take this shlal as an opportunity to spend tremendous chesed, to expend tremendous chesed. So the Navi, it's like a shira. It is a shira. The Navi continues, all the cities, all the places that David is giving and giving and giving, none of these people learned a thing. In fact, David's been running around in Yehuda for years. None of these people have helped him. David is giving, giving, and giving to all the places, right? It's all chesed. It's all Yudkevavke Hashem, as opposed to an obsession with shlal, power, recognizing the Ayve Hashem. So David does from the beginning of the battle all the way through to the end. Now, one last point, and this is, you know, classic David HaMelech, is that David often will find that, you know, it turns out, you know, Shaul always has the dilemma of doing what is right for his kingship versus what Hashem wants him to do. And David will consistently discover that as he does what Hashem wants him to do, ultimately that is what's best for his kingship, right? So he's totally doing the right thing. At first glance, his army should be furious with him. First, his risky behavior, you know, left them wanting to kill him because they thought that he had led their children and families into slavery. Then he turns on his men who reasonably, seemingly, want the spoils. He says, nah, we're going to spread it. But as the Navi describes all the places where David, throughout Sheva Yehuda, sends the spoils to, and it is amazing, chesed, but we have to notice, same time, what is the last city that David gives this gives the money to? Da, 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 da. Last place is Hebron. What is Hebron? Hebron is going to be the capital city of David's new kingship, which is going to start up in only a couple of prakim, when he is going to become the Melech of Shevet Yehuda. So there's no question that David also has political skills. And he notices that this is an opportunity, right? It's all chesed. It's all shlal mi'avei Hashem. And the Navi is as positive as it can possibly be about David through this whole parak. It's just contrasting him with Shaul. There are no ulterior motives over here. At the same time, David lives in the real world. And he does realize that sometimes doing the right thing can also come with political benefits. And that's what he capitalizes on over here. So stop here. Next week, we'll, you know, shift scene back to Shaul. It's going to be a depressing parak, but it's an interesting one. And thanks everyone for coming. Looking forward to next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.